Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Appreciate you listening. And we have the whole team is here today. Ed Battagliano, good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Walker Wildman, good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
I want to get back to you in just a minute, Walker.
All right.
Fred Jackson, news director for American Family Radio and OneNewsNow.com.
Always a pleasure.
Fred, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful.
So, Walker, yesterday we sent you on a mission to go to Washington, D.C. and meet with a very important group of people as our representative. What happened?
Well, I was filibustered by an airline. And
you're not gonna don't name the airline.
No, I spent.
We don't need a lawsuit.
I spent the entire day on the tarmac. Most of my day on the tarmac. So I flew out of Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah.
Direct to D.C. Well, I take a nap because I woke up so early. So I take a nap on the plane. Wake up about 2.5 hours later. The flight's only supposed to be about 1:45, and I look at my watch and out the window, and we're circling D.C. So I knew something was up. And then it turns out the fog. There was a heavy fog in D.C., couldn't land the airplane. So when we get low on fuel, we have to divert to Charlottesville, Virginia, spend 3 hours on the tarmac in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're told that D.C. has closed down the airport because of too much traffic. Once the fog lifted, there was too many planes trying to come in.
Fog never lifts in D.C., Walker, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, metaphorically it lifted. And so that we deplane, and I threw my hands up then. I didn't physically, but in my mind I did. So I got a rental car and drove to D.C. so I could at least catch my flight home.
From Charlottesville?
So drove from Charlottesville to D.C., and then that flight was delayed 3 hours out of D.C. I finally made it home at midnight last night and missed my meeting.
I will say this. I have heard people say that the tarmac at Charlottesville is one of the nicest.
Oh, come on.
Around. So
come
I have heard that. There is that.
It's like
very nice tarmac.
Yeah, there was like two gates there. But there were eight planes all diverted there at Charlottesville.
I am not a claustrophobic person, nor am I an impatient person, I don't think. But you telling me you're trapped inside a plane on the tarmac in Charlottesville for 3 hours, Walker?
Yes.
Were people's personalities coming out?
Well, the flight to D.C. was actually only had about 7 people on it. So it was it was not many people, and everybody was pretty calm for the most part.
Because they had space.
Yeah.
You're crammed in. Sitting next to the 300-pound guy in the center seat, middle seat.
Yeah, you're not so patient.
He's hogging the armrest.
I want off this plane.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but so, I finally made it home.
All right, you made it home at midnight?
Yeah, I made it home.
When you say you got up early, you got up like 2:30 in the morning.
I got up
the night
2:30 because my flight was out of Birmingham, which is 2 hours from here. So I had to get there and go through security.
Glad Walker didn't do what one guy with a similar situation did about 10 days ago. I think this was Australia? He was sitting on the tarmac, got tired. He goes to the window on the side of the plane, you know, the emergency window. Oh, and it comes. It walks down the wing and gets off the airplane.
Wow.
Man.
Better to ask forgiveness and permission
he
there.
He just took that window out. I'm out of here. Enough of this tarmac sitting here.
Well, you know, people, you go stir crazy. You get trapped on a in a very confined area for 3 hours, and then they're told you can't.
Especially
get out.
Sometimes this happens in the summer, and it gets hot. And let me just say this: if I had been in your shoes, get back at midnight, I'd have taken a half a day off the next day. I am really impressed that you came into work. You know,
Walker's 24, Ed.
You know, well, I'm trying to.
A day like that, I'll be in at lunchtime, guys.
Yeah. Well,
all right. So
maybe next.
Basically,
time.
What you're saying, as you look back on your life 50 years from now, that was a day you'll never be able to get back.
That's right. Wasted day.
That's what you're saying. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Walker, what are we doing on Facebook?
We're live streaming there. You can watch the show, Today's Issues, on Facebook. And also, you can comment on the show. Many of you share your thoughts each day on the news stories we talk about. Lastly, you can visit AFR.net and listen to the past shows. Visit AFR.net. Listen to past shows if you happen to miss the one today.
Okay. So go to our Today's Issues Facebook page and watch the program live there if you want to. And in 5 minutes, we're going to be joined by Dr. Gail Alexander, who's written a book with his friend Dr. John Adams. And the book is very pertinent to today's Christian world, and that is, who is in control of the church? Who is in control of the church? There's a lot of church strife, divisiveness, and breakdowns and separations, and just a lot of things going on inside the Christian church in America today that are unhealthy. And Gail Alexander and his friend John Adams try to bring some biblical thought to that and how to deal with issues within the church that will bring more unity. So we're going to talk about that in just a few moments. Fred Jackson, what's leading the news, though, today?
Well, Walker had a unique day yesterday. So did I. In my 40 years of journalism, I never saw what I saw coming out of Washington yesterday. You know, when heads of state come and visit the President of the United States, the media is invited in, little photo op, shake hands, and then the media goes out and then they talk. Yesterday, the President had a meeting at the White House to have discussions with Democrats and Republicans about DACA. It's the DACA, which is the Dreamers, the young illegals, came in with their moms and dads many years ago. It was by executive order by President Barack Obama back several years ago that these guys get to stay, these folks. President plans to end that program. And so, but he also wants to connect his desire to do that with securing the border, build the wall, which he ran heavily on during the election campaign. So the president invites all these people. You have this big table there at the White House, and there are Democrats like Dick Durbin, Senator Dick Durbin, Steny Hoyer, Feinstein, you name it, and then a bunch of Republicans, Senator Cotton, others, names that we all know. So the media is all there, and we think, and this is all happening live on television because it's a big meeting, big important meeting, and the media are all there, and everybody expects a few little statements from the president. Okay, thank you, media. Out of here. 55 minutes later, the media leaves. This meeting captivates the networks for an hour. Has the president, as some people are calling a brilliant move, allows the Democrats and Republicans to have their say on where they stand on all of this. Now, the bottom line in all of this is that basically the Democrats want to separate out the Dreamer. The president has said he wants to do something for the Dreamers. In fact, he calls it a love bill that he'd like to put out there. He'd allow them to stay. But he wants it connected to the building the wall. The Democrats do not. To give you a little flavor of the meeting, here's the president yesterday at this roundtable meeting with the media watching.
So I'm appealing to everyone in the room to put the country before a party, and to sit down and negotiate and to compromise, and let's see if we can get something done. I really think, Dick, that we have a chance to do it. I think it's very important. You're talking about 800,000 people, and you're talking about lots of other people are also affected, including people that live in our country. That's from the security standpoint. So I feel having the Democrats in with us is absolutely vital, because this should be a bipartisan bill. This should be a bill of love. Truly, it should be a bill of love, and we can do that. But it also has to be a bill where we're able to secure our border. Drugs are pouring into our country at a record pace. A lot of people are coming in that we can't have. There should be no reason for us not to get this done. And Chuck, I will say, when this group comes back, hopefully with an agreement, this group and others from the Senate, from the House, comes back with an agreement, I'm signing it. I mean, I will be signing it. I'm not going to say, oh, gee, I want this or I want that. I'll be signing it, because I have a lot of confidence in the people in this room that you're going to come out.
So there you have it. This was the art of the deal.
Now, the politicians did not know that he was going to pull this.
Oh, no. They thought it was going to be this regular routine, you know, a little photo op, and then the media would clear out. But you can see the look on their faces yesterday. Holy smokes, I am live on network television, and he's asking me where I stand on this issue and what we're going to do about it.
Because this way, they can't go out of a closed meeting and say, well, so-and-so said this, but I said this. Now it's on camera.
Absolutely.
Even Wolf Blitzer of CNN praised the president.
Oh, it was brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Rush Limbaugh was live on his program. He said, I'm watching it right now. There's the president standing there with his hands over his chest like this. And he says, this is incredible what's going on here. on the record, as you say, Ed, everybody was on the record around that table as to where we're going. We'll see what happens.
Well, don't. The lesson of that is, if you don't, two things. Number one, if you don't want to be on the record, don't go to the White House.
That's right.
Okay, that's lesson number one.
Lesson number one.
Lesson number two is, if you don't know where you stand and you're not willing to stand behind where you stand, then you shouldn't be there anyway, because you can't. You know, this is a real important issue. So, I think it's so that basically the president put them all on the spot, but you could say it another way. He allowed them to have their say, Democrats and Republicans, right?
And no reporter could misinterpret, because you were listening to these politicians live. Now, part two of all of this, there are a lot of people on the conservative side of things who are really upset that the president now appears to be in favor of some kind of amnesty for these dreamers. And there are a lot of folks upset about that, and we're covering that story today.
To the president's credit, real quick, is before New Year's, President Trump and the Republicans passed a tax bill. Mm-hmm. Many of you know about that. Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of the senators, in order to get the tax bill, they said, we want you to at least bring up DACA after the new year, which is what they met yesterday. So I think President Trump is keeping his word. Mm-hmm. This is not on his agenda, but it is on other people's agenda. And I think the meeting yesterday was him simply keeping his word of, yes, if you vote for the tax bill as a Republican, I will at least entertain this after the new year.
Right.
To his
I don't think I think it's more than that, Walker. He's going to sign it, what he just said.
Well, if it has certain things in it.
He said he's going to. If he gets funding for the border security wall, he's going to sign
the
amnesty.
That's what he has said.
Is it called amnesty? Would it be full legal rights?
Well, that's what they're going to have to. Yeah. That's what they'll have to decide is how this. And DACA means deferred action for childhood arrivals. These are the people who came here with their legal parents as children.
Yeah.
And so as this unspools in the days ahead, maybe they'll be working on what to do with all these 800,000.
Where did unspools come from? Deep within you?
Oh,
unspools. I've never heard that word on this show.
Really?
Yeah.
I've used it many times.
I just missed it.
I don't know how many, but many.
Okay.
Many. Million. Maybe
how do you
millions.
Spell it?
Unspool?
Yeah.
S-P-O-O-L.
With the U-N in front.
With the U-N in front. Unspool.
So it's a U-N? It's a U-N word?
Yeah, U-N approved.
Not on this show, Ed.
It's U-N approved.
We're America first. We're here.
America.
All right. We are joined now in studio by Dr. Gail Alexander. He's written a book with his friend, Dr. John Adams, which is very important for the church in America today, I think, to grapple with these issues that he discusses and talks about and writes about. Dr. Gail, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Just in the matter of full disclosure, Dr. Alexander served as our chairman of the board here at American Family Association. Therefore, he has my cell phone number. And can get on this show about any time he wants to. I invited him. He didn't invite himself. I invited him after reading, not all of it, but through your book about the church that you've written here. First of all, how many years did you serve as a pastor?
About 52 years as a pastor. And of course, I still do interim work.
52. But 52 years answering to deacons.
Yes, that is correct.
That alone's a book right there.
You got it.
But you served in Southern Baptist churches, true?
That's true.
Okay. Now, tell us about this book you've written. Walker, are you going to put that on our Facebook page?
I will.
It's called, and I'm holding it up for those watching on Facebook, it's called Who is in Control of the Church? And it's subtitled A Guide to Unity and Peace Within the Church. What motivated you and your friend Dr. Adams to write this?
Well, as you indicated a while ago, Tim, and let me say, first of all, that I appreciate very much you having me on the air, AFA radio, and Dr. Adams sends his appreciation as well. But you indicated a while ago about the great deal of conflict within the church, and the church ought to be united in order to present an accurate presentation of the gospel to the community. We are to be redemptive to the world at large. But with so much inner turmoil and conflict in the church, so oftentimes that is prevented.
Okay, you're talking about the church broadly. I know that, but you're talking about that within individual churches across America, there's maybe more strife and division than there's ever been that you've seen?
Well, probably that is true. And this book is zeroed in on the local church.
Okay.
Statistics have revealed the fact that about 30% of ministers are terminated from the church they're serving. Also, studies have shown that about 50% of those that are terminated never return to the ministry. That in itself is a shame and a disgrace upon the church. So the major issue of those terminations, and there's a lot of other issues besides this one, but the number one issue is over the matter of control. Well, that's the reason we wrote the book, and that's the reason for the title, Who is in Control of the Church? So we've addressed that from the standpoint of the responsibilities of the church to the pastor, the responsibilities of the pastor to the church. But the first section of the book deals with this business of authority and the role that God has assigned to the pastor as being the shepherd leader in the church. So we've spent a great deal of time in the first part identifying the pastor's sources of authority. I put those down in two different categories. The first is conferred authority, and then, excuse me, the second is earned authority. As far as the conferred authority is concerned, and I think people would find this very interesting, we've got five or six sources here that are identified for the pastor's authority. If I can just briefly mention those to you and to the listening audience.
Yes, and we understand, and Dr. Gale understands too, Dr. Gale Alexander in studio with us, that different denominations have different governing.
That is correct.
So we understand that, but we understand and acknowledge that. But go ahead, continue on.
Well, regardless of the denominational affiliation,
right,
these problems exist in most churches of most denominations.
Gotcha.
But in terms of conferred authority, and these ought to be pretty well self-explanatory, authority conferred by God's call to the ministry and all the prophets, New Testament writers, and so forth, identify a call experience to the ministry. Like Paul says that he was an apostle by the will of God. Well, if you are standing in the place of God, that in itself carries the authority of God. And subsequent to that, authority confirmed by the Bible as the Word of God. If a minister is preaching the Word of God, it's not his word, it's God's word. That's where the authority comes from. There's also authority conferred by the church as an institution. For instance, in Acts chapter 13, where the church laid hands on the apostle Paul and Barnabas and sent them out, well, it's an indication that they're going under the auspices of the church and have the authority of the church behind them. And then the authority is conferred also by the role of the minister. God has assigned the pastor to be the shepherd leader of the church. There's a lot of misunderstanding on the part of a lot of church people about the role of the pastor and his subsequent authority for leadership. Go back to an illustration, for instance, of Moses, where Aaron and his sister Miriam said in Deuteronomy that, has God only spoken through Moses? Does he not also speak through us? Well, God heard what they said, and then as a result of that, Miriam was stricken with leprosy. God wanted a single voice in terms of leadership. You can't have divided leadership in any organization for that matter. So it's authority conferred by the role of the minister and also conferred by training. And this would be across all disciplines of education. Seminary training, training in the field that you're working in. Every field of discipline requires that. So there is a level of authority that is conferred on a person with formal training. Just as an aside, that probably is one of the reasons why the religious leaders of Jesus' day did not accept him. He did not have a degree from a rabbinical school. So he didn't have conferred authority from an institution per se. But there's also a level of authority that is given by experience. That is, and that again is across disciplines. You go to apply for a job, you know, what kind of experience have you had? The more experience a person has, the greater level of authority is granted to that person to serve. And then also authority conferred in the role of a servant. In fact, the more a person demonstrates himself to be a servant, the greater authority he is given by the congregation. And that would be true in other, for instance, the mayor of the city. The more that he demonstrates himself to be a servant to the people, mm-hmm. the more the people accepts his authority. And then the last one is authority that is conferred monetarily. That requires a great deal of discussion. We probably don't have time for that today. But let me just briefly refer to that. The Old Testament laws of inheritance required that the oldest son receive twice the inheritance of any other sibling. That was for the purpose of establishing leadership. The oldest son had the responsibility of leadership in the family when the dad passed away. How is that leadership accepted? Well, it's a double portion of the inheritance. You move over to the New Testament, and that's what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy, that the man who labors in the word and doctrine, that would be the pastor, should be considered counted worthy of double honor. Well, incidentally, the word honor there is the same word for money. So he's talking about money. Well, he goes on to say that the laborer is worthy of his hire. Well, that's what he's dealing with. But there's also an authority that is conferred, that is earned authority. We've got three things under that.
We got about a couple minutes here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more to be said.
I know. I want to tell folks. I know time passes quickly. Your book goes into so much, and it's in terms of time, it's an easy read. It's a couple of hours, but it's got so much content in it relative to the things you're talking about. The book is called "Who Is in Control of the Church: A Guide to Unity and Peace Within the Church," written by Dr. Gail Alexander, who's in studio with us right now, and Dr. John Adams. How can people get a copy of this book? Where do they need to go?
Well, it's available on all online sales people.
Okay.
Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and so forth. And I would appeal to lay people to buy a copy for their pastor.
Okay.
It needs to be in the hands of lay people as well as pastors, because that first section dealing with authority is crucial. And if they understand and accept that, then the rest of the book falls into the line pretty well.
Okay. It's called "Who Is in Control of the Church?" And Walker, are you putting that on our Facebook page as
yes.
well? Our Today's Issues Facebook page. Do you want to give a contact for you, your email, or you would rather not do that? Or?
Well, that would be fine.
Okay, what's your email?
Gayle, G-A-Y-L-E,
okay.
FBC as in First Baptist Church, at bellsouth.net.
Give it one more time, if you would.
G-A-Y-L-E, FBC, at bellsouth.net.
Thank you for writing this mm-hmm. and for doing this for the church.
Well, thank you very much, and we just pray that God will use it for His glory and for the unity of the church.
Unity of the church, and so that we can go unhindered into the coming decades to right. share the gospel with mm-hmm. the world.
That's right.
Can't do that effectively if you've got churches everywhere that are torn apart.
Right. That is correct. Mm-hmm. And let me say a word of appreciation to yeah. you and for AFA. For what you do to impact our world for the cause of Christ.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Gayle. Dr. Gayle Alexander with us the last few minutes. We're going to take a break right here. We'll be back with more of Today's Issues on American Family Radio. You don't go anywhere.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Jan Markell of Olive Tree Ministries.
Some are acknowledging Donald Trump is actually accomplishing some things. Well, yeah, lots of things, from reducing the Leviathan state of government. ISIS has lost most of its caliphate, so I would hope the left would acknowledge some of that.
We'll also get an up-close view on the latest in the news. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
If you like trips where you have to plan everything, then maybe our tour is not for you. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Of course, I'm talking about our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, and then a separate trip to Williamsburg, Virginia. And guess what? We take care of everything. All you have to do is, as they say, show up. But we take these spiritual heritage tours twice a year, once in June and once in September. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, who is a historian, will be joining us for both tours, and he will tell you everything you need to know about the places, the times, the events that we will experience on these tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. For all the information, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com for everything.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. President Trump signaled to pro-amnesty Democrats and Republicans that he is willing to negotiate on one of his fundamental campaign promises, to build a border wall and secure the borders.
There should be no reason for us not to get this done. And Chuck, I will say, when this group comes back, hopefully with an agreement, this group and others from the Senate, from the House, comes back with an agreement, I'm signing it. I mean, I will be signing it. I'm not going to say, oh, gee, I want this or I want that. I'll be signing it because I have a lot of confidence in the people in this room that you're going to come out with something really good.
Conservatives are livid, accusing the president of surrendering to Democrats like Chuck Schumer. Now, I know the president promised to build a wall and secure the border. I know he promised to drain the swamp, but it sounds like President Trump may have come down with a bad case of swamp fever. Here's hoping for a speedy recovery. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed, Walker, and Fred. You know, I almost wished I lived somewhere where you knew you weren't going to be able to get outside for 3 months.
Rather than get your hopes up and have them brutally shattered.
Here in Northeast Mississippi, where I live, it's, you know, the winter times, you're going to have some 55, maybe even some 60s. Mm-hmm. Normally, even 62, 63 during January or February at times, if we get some good global warming. But I'm talking about the good global warming, not the, not the bad kind.
Right.
The good global warming. But, man, when it's like, you know, under 35 for 5, 6, 7, 8 days and then going into 2 weeks and then everything like that, it just, I don't know, it affects my person.
Your personality.
Well, can you tell?
Well, listen, you said yesterday, you had a great line yesterday. You said, well, we're supposed to warm up to like, you know, 62, 63
for
a few days.
Praise the Lord.
And then it's right back to North Dakota.
I know. And on the day it's 62 or 63, it's supposed to rain. So, yes, if you're sort of sensing that that I enjoy golf, you're right. And I'm not going to be able to for, I don't know, January, I guess. We'll see how it goes. Do you enjoy anything outdoors that you miss because of poor weather, Ed? Are you an outdoorsy type
I enjoy, you know, I miss you know, bear wrestling. You know, wrestling bears.
Yeah,
that's a sport you don't want. You can't bring that inside.
Oh, you can't.
My wife, no. My wife would kill both of us, me and the bear. No, I mean, you know, I like going out and doing a little yard work and stuff, but like I don't golf.
Right,
you know.
Right. Do you fish? Or?
I don't fish or hunt. Yeah. Not because of religious reasons. I'm just not getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go sit out in a deer stand.
You're just an exercise fanatic, though, aren't you?
But so, what is this? So you can start mocking me now?
Yeah.
Is this what this is? You can start mocking me?
This
because golfing is just really –
He made you take a spelling.
A lot of high cardio.
You had to take a spelling test in the first segment.
Hey, you have to get out of your cart.
Out of your cart.
And walk up to the green. Sometimes it can be 50 feet.
You have to address the ball.
You have to address the ball and then swing hard.
Yeah.
And do that
then
many times.
Then get back in the cart.
During
I
round.
Get that kind of exercise going from my chair here to the popcorn machine. I power walk.
You haven't even done that this morning.
I haven't. I haven't had time.
All right.
You're working too hard.
All right. But you're
the self, okay. self
we better stop
now.
Right here, Ed. I think we could create disunity in the church.
And I'll have to write a book.
Yes. Ed, Fred will have to address it.
Fred
All right. So, where were we? We weren't anywhere. That's where we were. We weren't anywhere. You're listening to Today's Issues. Walker, what have you put up on our Today's Issues Facebook page this morning?
I posted a link to Dr. Gail Alexander's book.
Uh-huh.
And I also posted all the links to a couple of the news stories that Fred Jackson mentioned earlier in the show.
Okay, Fred who?
Fred Jackson.
Oh, I didn't know there was more than one Fred here. But Fred, thank you for sharing those news stories with us.
Oh, absolutely. I get up early to do that.
Well, let's. Abraham Hamilton III has taken time out of his schedule to be with us this morning. He's the General Counsel for American Family Association and host of the Hamilton Corner each afternoon, 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, Tim, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well. How are you guys?
What do you think about this whole trade idea or art of the deal idea that President Trump is considering with the Democrats and I guess some Republicans? That is money for a border security wall. In exchange for, would it be considered full amnesty for they call them dreamers. That's really not.
They're illegal immigrants who are younger.
That's okay. They're illegal immigrants who were brought here by their parents.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And have grown up here.
Or other adults.
Right.
Yes.
And have grown up here.
This
is all they know.
What do you think about all this, Abe?
Am I wrong, or did the president agree to entertain a clean DACA bill as a part of phase one?
No.
He didn't.
Mm-mm. He did not agree to that.
Mm.
And what we're calling is the Democrats want a bill that just deals with dreamers.
Right.
Forget about border wall. Forget about chain migration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we may visit it later, the wall, but, you know,
we
want this first.
Yeah.
Of course.
But he wants to bring the two things together under one bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the art of the deal type thing, isn't it? That's the, what do you call it, negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think about all this?
Yeah, I've said before, I don't think, I know some of you guys may disagree with me, but I don't think you have to absolutely grant full amnesty to the people who are being described as dreamers. I think developing an immigration policy that considers what's in the best interest of Americans is important. And I think that you can develop an immigration framework where you're able to evaluate people on an individual basis instead of approaching this from a broad-based every single person under this particular category. Because I think one of the things that is not really discussed as much publicly that I think the number of who we consider dreamers is being undersold intentionally as well. I think it's way more than 700 to 800,000. You have people who have attempted to avail themselves of former President Obama's illegal executive order, but then you have scores of people who have not, who are still here too. And so I think to approach this and say categorically all these people get this thing, I think is the wrong approach.
How do you prove that? What if somebody's lying?
That you came here as a child by your parents?
How do you
Great question, Tim.
You can't.
And what do you think is going to happen once or if there is a type of bill. Of course, I know they have people say you have to prove you've been here in this amount of time and that amount of time, but there's never been any type of fraud ever perpetrated on any federal program, has there?
Well, the only way, I mean, and I don't know that anybody would have this kind of material, but I mean, if you can prove that when you were 2 years old, you got your measles, your shot, mm-hmm. you know, doctor, you know, this address, and
right.
you know, you have some, you know, light bills for there would be now who has all that kind of material, especially if you're 22, 23 years old, and you came here when you were 5 or 6. I don't know who has all that kind of information or that kind of paper trail, but I mean, you could prove that you were in the country at least during those time periods. You can't prove that you weren't going back and forth.
You know, I think all of this is gonna die out, meaning it's not gonna go anywhere. The reason I say that is because I think President Trump is sitting at the table with both parties to say he at least tried, because Democrats are not gonna vote for $1 of spending for a border wall. Not $1 of spending for a border wall a Democrat is going to vote for. So because their base will absolutely go crazy if Democrats fund a border fence or a border wall. So unless President Trump has said, I'm not signing a bill unless there's funding for my border wall. So I think they're just going to talk for a couple weeks and they're not going to do anything about it, because Democrats, you need 60 votes to pass a bill in the Senate, and Democrats have already said they're not voting to fund a wall.
Well, and plus, I'm just guessing, and I'm not sure all the intricacies, and Abe, you may have a little more insight here on this. This DACA thing has to be figured out before March, right?
March 5th.
March 5th, because that's when President Obama's executive order putting off doing anything with them expires.
That's right.
So the Democrats appear to be perfectly willing to shut down the government over this. Mm-hmm. And I think they may very well say, no, we're not going to give you a wall, and we are going to shut down the government. President Trump and the Republicans, you're shutting down the government because you won't extend President Obama's DACA.
To Ed's point about the expiring of this in March, but we have this judge's decision out of San Francisco last night. This federal judge who says he's blocking Trump's decision to end this young illegals program. This judge, U.S. District Judge William Alsup, who was appointed to the federal judgeship by Bill Clinton, this is what he said in saying, I'm going to put a stop to this. I'm going to block this. He said, lawyers in favor of DACA clearly demonstrated to him that the young illegals, quote, were likely to suffer serious irreparable harm without court action. The judge also said the lawyers have a strong chance of succeeding at trial. They are in the country illegally. If you're committing an illegal act, there ought to be something serious that happens to you. And this judge, that's, Abe, correct me if I'm wrong, that's not a legal opinion, that's an emotional opinion.
Of course.
A federal judge? Just a federal judge?
This is a federal judge.
Yeah.
Well, let me just ask you this. A federal judge who says, I'm blocking this policy because it will result in harm. I mean, that's true about any law,
exactly.
Right? I mean, that's true. That's true.
If I get a speeding ticket, I get a fine.
If someone's arrested for, you know, trafficking heroin, now I'm not comparing the DACA people with heroin, you know, drug runners, but if someone's arrested for that, that's like a lawyer going to the judge and say, this person's going to suffer irreparable harm. He's going to go to prison. His record, you know, blah, 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 blah. You can't go based on harm. You have to say to the legislative authority that passed the law, that's their job to determine whether the harm is worth it.
And here the thing that this judge is saying, he's literally saying that the president has no authority to refrain from reinstituting an executive order.
It's an executive order.
That's literally what
law.
He's saying.
Yeah.
It's
true.
A congressional
true,
law.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's saying that President Trump does not have the lawful authority to refrain from reauthorizing an executive order that was unconstitutional in the first place.
So really the Democrats and Republicans don't even have to reach a deal. All they need is a federal judge to reach in and say these 700,000 or whatever, they have legal status.
I'm sure someone can find that judge.
Yes.
Well, this judge is like the Hawaii judge mm-hmm. who ruled against the travel ban, completely out of line here, and it will have to be reversed by the Supreme Court, even with their liberals on there.
And this is what concerns me based on what Walker said, and I've been thinking about this myself, that if you have, you know, let's say the president and Congress cannot come to an agreement or whatever, what we very well may see is inaction by the Congress and interjection by the courts.
Yeah.
To where they say, fine, we will go ahead and serve in our extra legislative functions and continue to legislate from the bench as we have done time and time again.
Where does that end? Where does this end for our republic if that kind of thing becomes the norm?
We literally, in my opinion, are witnessing an amending of our Constitution without the people's yeah. input.
Here's where it ends. A federal judge, such as the one last night in San Francisco, will rule that all illegal immigrants now have a form of legal status.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about this issue, but that I expect
and
that
then,
to
And
happen.
Then they'll go and get
I'm
registered
talking
to vote.
About if you have judges who will now continue to rule. No, travel ban, no, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, he can't do the thing with DACA. I'm going to legalize all these citizens.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're looking at an oligarchy where the judges take over, and they're basically saying to all the legislative bodies on every level, you don't just go home.
It's irrelevant what you do in terms of being a representative of the people's government, because what ultimately is going to carry the day is what the judicial oligarchy says. And I think
mm-hmm. well,
I think we need to arouse the attention of the American people to this and demand Congress to do what they are constitutionally committed to do, which is to rein in judges who consistently violate the Constitution. You basically have to just say, oh, no. I don't like
they
what President
Trump
is doing.
They did this with the transgender thing in the military,
same
too.
Thing.
I mean, there's no
yeah.
stopping
so,
these
So you have the courts running the military. You have the courts
yeah.
setting immigration policy. You have the courts being the arbiter of national defense. You have the courts determining what is best for the American people,
yeah.
which is not what the Constitution says.
But you're listening to Today's Issues. That's the name of the show on the American Family Radio Network. We're discussing the situation in Washington, D.C. between the president and the Democrats and the Republicans, too, in terms of the president's trying to get his border wall funding. I don't know how much he already has to apply towards the border security wall that he promised during the campaign. And the idea is that he may trade that funding that the Democrats would help him with, which Walker doesn't think is going to happen, for some kind of legalized citizenship or some kind of legalized citizenship, I guess maybe that's a double, I don't need all those words there, but citizenship for the Dreamers, the DACA folks, as I called them yesterday, that is the children who were brought here who are now adults, who were brought here illegally by their parents, or they were brought here illegally by coyotes.
I was just about to say that, coyotes?
Yeah, or by other people. They got here some way as a child, and what to do with them, because this is the only country that they've ever known. You're listening to Today's Issues. You know, what you guys are talking about is the tension that is building between the people who respect the Constitution and our form of government that our founders gave us. And what Thomas Jefferson warned about, which is what Ed Battagliano warned about, an oligarchy, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that, an oligarchy, if you don't know what that means where basically judges control the country by edict, okay? Even if it's outside their constitutional authority to do so. And this is Abe talked about this. Well, what is the answer to that? What is the because the founders did create a document and a form of government with checks and balances, and so you can stop any one branch of government from having too much mm-hmm. authority, right?
Right.
In this situation, though, we've reached a point. I don't mean to be too negative here or depressing, but I don't think the Congress is going to impeach anybody.
Right.
And short of a federal judge shooting somebody on the front lawn of the courthouse or a bribery situation, which they have impeached for bribery. And by the way, does it take more than a majority to impeach a federal judge? Just
no,
a majority?
Just a majority of Congress members.
Okay.
Articles of impeachment filed in the House of Representatives and the sentence, if you will, imposed by the U.S. Senate.
I don't think that – is that a House and a Senate situation or just Senate?
The House has to file the articles of impeachment and vote to impeach, but the Senate has to vote to enforce the penalty.
They basically – they hold almost like a trial, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, can you imagine what it would take just for one judge to be impeached? I mean, that would take all our time and energy for.
Well, you'd have the Democrats all in favor of what these judges are doing.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But the facts are right now, you don't need the Democrats. You have enough Republicans in the House where you could do it now.
That's what I'm saying.
What about in the Senate?
Well, in the Senate,
I'm guessing that those that think like Democrats. I'm thinking like Olympia Snow or someone that they would. This is a bad precedent, just like they do with the filibuster.
They did
this
it with Bill Clinton.
This is a bad precedent. We can't go down this road. We'll politicize. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And you'll have five or six Republicans voting with Democrats.
I will say this though. Like, remember what Bill Clinton when he was impeached? The House of Representatives impeached Bill Clinton. The Senate refused to enforce that impeachment. But it is on record that Bill Clinton was impeached. Yeah. I think it would do the country a great deal of good if the House of Representatives would go on record with demonstrable evidence of these judges exceeding their authority and usurping the powers of, namely, the Congress.
I think that's pretty good.
I think that would be an important step. It would be a shot across the bow, so to speak, to let these judges know, hey, we know that you are Article III courts. We know that we are the branch charged with keeping you in line. And then should you step outside of your constitutional functions, we will take action. I think that will be an important move for the judiciary to see. Because this would start the discussion.
It would start the discussion among the American people
as
to what the Constitution says about the three branches of government.
Yes.
Abe, for example, the Hawaii judge, when it comes to the travel restrictions that President Trump signed months ago, the one judge in Hawaii ruled on three separate occasions against President Trump. I don't understand if the Supreme Court rules and overturns a judge's unconstitutional ruling, why can the president, next time the judge intervenes when he shouldn't, why can the president not cite the former Supreme Court case and ignore the lower court judge because the same case has already been tried and already been ruled on by the higher court?
I don't think there's anything legally prohibiting the president from doing it. I think he wants to avoid the appearance of being, you know, a tyrannical dictator. But I think when you have a Supreme Court opinion, you have a higher benchmark of authority to utilize and say, listen, we love Hawaii for many things, but immigration policy is not one of them. So we're going to continue to operating in our constitutional authority.
It's the same judge here, too. This is personal.
The same one.
Yeah. This is personal. And what we're saying here, federal judges have become little gods.
Yes.
And they can't be touched, seemingly.
And their rulings don't even have to be grounded in reality.
That's what's so frustrating for people who revere the Constitution and want law and order and the process to work. You see judges, in the case of the travel ban, the Hawaii judge there, the federal judge in Hawaii, the one federal judge in Hawaii, and I think it was another one in Washington State, wasn't it, originally, who ruled against President Trump's temporary travel ban. Mm-hmm. This isn't ambiguous. This was clearly a constitutional and statutory case of the president having the authority to do this. And this judge challenges that authority with no basis in constitutionality. And he gets away with it, except for the Supreme Court reversing him. But you get another secular progressive on the Supreme Court where they have a 5-4 majority on cases, then there'll be no stopping them. There'll be no stopping these guys. And I don't know, to Ed's earlier point, I don't know where this ultimately leads. Does it lead to civil war or bloodshed in the streets over some issue? Because, I mean, I'm just throwing out
Well, the worst and maybe most tragic point is that the vast majority of the American people have no idea how our government's supposed to work. So you start doing these things to Abe's point. The president says, we're not going to do this, and people are going to say, well, he's a dictator. They're not having any understanding, perhaps, what the House is doing, what the president is doing, is what's in the Constitution.
Yeah. The best way to solve this situation, and it doesn't help us right now in this moment, but the best way to solve this situation, because impeachment's highly unlikely, if ever going to happen, for the reasons we've talked about here, is to change the federal courts.
Yeah.
By replacing these uber liberals with conservative constitutional judges. That's what President Trump is doing. The election of President Trump, whatever you may be thinking about him on many different levels, it saved our country, potentially saved our country. We don't know how this will look in 10, 20 years, from a complete takeover of the federal courts by the secular progressives. You would have had 8 years of Obama, then you'd had at least 4 years of Hillary Clinton. The Supreme Court would have been lost for a generation. It would have been horrible for our country had he not been elected. Just for the federal judiciary, including the Supreme Court itself. So I'm not overstating that. Not overstating that at all. All right, Abraham Hamilton III. Abe has been with us this half hour. Abe, what are you going to talk about this afternoon on the Hamilton Corner?
Well, I'm going to make some suggestions to Congress as to what needs to be done to rein in these judges. You have, I think, the suggestion you pointed out with President Trump is critically important, and I think that our Congress may need to be lovingly encouraged to use their powers under Article 3 to reconstitute and reform some of these courts. That would be a step in the right direction. That could be a more expeditious movement in the right direction.
I didn't even think about this. I do like your recommendation that at least the House of Representatives go on record as whatever you want to call it, shaming these federal judges who are overreaching, and at least do that much. You may not be able to impeach for the reasons Ed mentioned. You got Democrats would block that, and some Republicans would agree with them. All right, Abe, thank you so much. We look forward to the show this afternoon.
Thank you, guys.
Abe will be on at 5:05 Central Time this afternoon here on American Family Radio. We got 1 minute left to talk. Fred, go ahead. What do you want to talk about, Fred?
Well, the mayor of Madison, Wisconsin, announced this morning that he is going to take on Governor Walker in the election this fall. Now, who is this mayor? He's Mayor Paul Soglin. Now, he's been in and out of the mayor's chair in Madison, Wisconsin, one of the most left-wing cities in the country, for about 20 years. One of the things he's best known for, back many years ago when he was mayor, he offered Fidel Castro the keys to the city. So if you need an indication of Governor Walker, where he stands on the issues, and this mayor who now wants to run as a Democrat for governor of Wisconsin, there you have it.
Madison's already considered the Berkeley of the Midwest.
Yes.
And this is a guy who loved Fidel Castro.
Absolutely. Offered him the keys to the city.
And he's running against Scott Walker?
Running against Scott Walker.
Does he have a chance to beat him?
Am I allowed to express an opinion?
In 10 seconds or less.
I hope not.
Okay. All right. We shall return with more of today's issues in 5 minutes. We're going to take a break for our newscast, and then we'll be back at 11:05 with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.